A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. 100% engagement.
It's a total disrespect.
Download Stand Well Back. Listen.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
I don't see that view.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, TalkSport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself and Simon discuss Nottingham Forest alleging bias, corruption, and requesting the VAR audio from their defeat at Everton to be publicly released. What exactly are Forest trying to achieve in this saga? Are they digging a deeper hole for themselves with each passing statement? Meantime, we were delighted to be joined in the studio by Charlton co-owner Charlie Methven to discuss FA Cup replays being scrapped, football ownership in the EFL and life at Charlton. Plus, British super lightweight boxer Jack Catterall joins us to talk about his upcoming rematch with bitter rival Josh Taylor, scheduled for May the 25th in Leeds. You're listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. English referees going to be on duty at the Euros. This is just into us here. Michael Oliver is one of two English referees who will officiate at the Euros. Of course, Anthony Taylor is the other. I wonder what Mourinho thinks of that. Anthony Taylor is one of two English referees and working on VAR. Stuart Atwell. Stuart Atwell will be working on VAR duty at the Euros come the summer. Well, in a few weeks from now. Oh. And of course, England in the Euros, Scotland in the Euros. The two referees, Anthony Taylor and Michael Oliver, and Stuart Atwell
I tell you
on
what,
VAR.
We don't want Stuart Atwell on VAR if Greece are playing, because Marinakis will spontaneously combust, won't he?
that's a great observation. One has to think, though, Simon, obviously logic tells me that Stuart Atwell has been chosen because he's pretty darn good when it comes to operating in the VAR truck.
Or maybe he's the best of a bad bunch by other people's qualification. Look, we all have our view on the decisions. No one can say that all three of those decisions covered the VAR official in glory, certainly not the third one. The other two we can debate.
What, Soonest? Yeah.
So as soon as we'll have his views, but Danny Murphy had another view, so there shows you the subjectivity of it all.
Right.
But the third one, I think everyone's alighted upon that should have been a penalty. And so when we talk about competency, this argument should be about competency. What Nottingham Forest have made it about is about corruption.
Well, I mean, for those who don't know, Stuart Atwell was on VAR duty at the weekend in that game at Goodison, which Everton won against Nottingham Forest. Since then, there has been an enormous fallout from that match because Forest had, in their eyes, three legitimate penalty claims, all turned down, and they insist that Stuart Atwell is a Luton fan and flagged that up before the game was played. But it's our understanding, and we have been at pains to stress this, even though their referee analyst Mark Clattenburg got in touch with Howard Webb prior to the game, it's our understanding here, and I said it yesterday and I'll say it again today, Forest did not ask for Atwell to be removed from the fixture as they had no issue at the time. So if they had a big issue at the time, why didn't they flag it up at the time? It appears they didn't have an issue at the time. But thereafter, after the match, following these three unsuccessful penalty claims, of course, all hell has broken loose. Simon, this is very much a story of statements from Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. The first statement from Forrest straight after the game at the weekend, a game which Everton won, was suggesting to us their concern that Atwell was a Luton fan. They didn't name him, if memory serves me right, from that statement. They said that the individual on VAR is a Luton fan. But then in their third statement yesterday, we know match officials do not allow outside factors to influence their decision making. So what's your problem, Nottingham Forest? I mean, Simon, do you see that line? We know match officials do not allow outside factors to influence their decision making. Well, if you know that, then there's no problem, is there?
Well, this is Forrest thinking post their original statement about how to manifest a direction of travel that doesn't allow them to be caught in the crosshairs of the observations they made in the first one. Because it is slightly conflicting information. But they then go on to say, for whatever reason they feel they need to, that, however, it's clear PGMO must amend its rule on allegiances to account for contextual rivals in the league table. So on one hand, they're saying...
Do you agree with that?
Well, I...
Because of alleged allegiances, the PGMOL are going to have to...
But it's the same thing, dressed up in a different guise.
But the rules.
On one hand, you're saying that we know that match officials don't have these allegiances and it doesn't affect the decision-making process. And the next thing, you're saying it possibly could. So let's remove any... What they're saying there, let's remove any debate. Let's remove... It's like multi-club ownership, isn't it? My view is multi-club ownership is problematic because it creates some of the problems that it was originally outlawed from doing and now does, which is clubs being able to sell players to one another and creating a rigged marketplace.
Yeah.
A bit of gerrymandering going on in football. So you think of that in that respect. So what the argument would be is get rid of multi-club ownership, then you have no debate about it. So what they're saying is, and they're softening their message, they're saying on one hand, no, we weren't having a go at this fella. We're not suggesting that he has any allegiances, his behaviour is inappropriate, and we're rowing back from the idea that we were really flagging, which is we think there is. And now we're going to dress it up as, but to avoid any doubt going forward, us reasonable folk at Forest suggest that they'd be better served making sure that this doesn't become a question. So the PGMOL's response will be, well, thank you very much. We've already considered that. Thank you for your help and your insight and your wonderful thought processes, but we've already factored that into our thinking. Because what we really didn't want to do is we didn't want to get a rabid, you know, deluded football fan of a particular football club officiating a game. We've already considered that. Thanks very much. Off you go.
Right. The next stage in the proceedings is...
They should say that.
Forrest have asked the PGMOL to release the audio from those penalty moments, those penalty claim moments in the game against Everton at Goodison.
Yeah.
Penalty not given. So that's where they want to hear, and they want to hear the exchange, obviously involving Atwell and the match referee. Now, it's hard to think that the PGMOL will not release the audio, because they released the audio regards to Luis Diaz goal that was ruled out for Liverpool against Tottenham.
But that was clearly a systemic failure. This is not necessarily a systemic failure. This is human error on the part of a subjective decision.
But it set a precedent.
Well, it set a precedent of releasing audio on the basis of clear systemic failure. It was clear, the PGML knew it was clear that ultimately one person had heard something completely different from the pitch and the communication was different. Now, I'm not averse, and it is becoming more of an apparent thing to me, which is moving into your camp about the transparency of communication in the football world, because we've opened this Pandora's box now of VAR. We've implemented a version of it which isn't good enough and we've created a problem. So it might be better to give transparency. The problem is, I'm not sure that people at Nottingham Forest should be able to throw their weight around the way they are and get what they want when they want it as a result of it, because then you create a precedent that every single time a club doesn't like something, because it's one thing an emotive, ranting, deranged manager after a game having his say. It's another thing the football club coming in behind, like the Arsenal did with Arteta and like Nottingham Forest have done on this instance, demanding, banging their hand on the table saying, we demand this and we can say what we want about whoever we want without any consequence. So I'm not averse for the transparency side of things for the PGMOL to go, right, you have this. Now, but by the way, when it turns out that there was a legitimate decision-making process and the reasons why were quite clear, we want you also to be able to, on the front foot about saying that, you might not like the decisions, but we are actually understand the process. It's the balance, Jim, between giving someone what they think they're entitled to, when they think they're entitled to it, and how they ask and what they get from it, against setting precedents for every football club, every single time a bleeding corner's given that they don't like, they can ask for audio.
I agree with that, but Liverpool on social media, if memory serves me right, requested the audio be released on the Diaz goal, and they released it. So there is a precedent set here, Simon. So Forrester pushing for that. The PGM will have no choice. Release it.
But granted.
Let's hear it.
But granted, but we... And it may well be... Because first and foremost, the PGML, what did the PGML come out and do before Liverpool asked for the audio? They copped to the mistake.
Yeah.
They made an apology. So that made the Liverpool's position even more strident because they didn't want to hear the audio, right?
Yeah.
But the point is that no one in VAR has said they've made an error. And if they have made an error, it was an error of judgment which happens in football. There wasn't an error of judgment which happened in football for the Tottenham-Liverpool game. There was a systemic failing in the communication. That's a different methodology and that's a different set of parameters to judge it by.
Everton won the game by 2-0. Forrest took nothing from it. I do continue to wonder if Forrest had won that game, would we be hearing such a stink? I'm not so sure. Daryl is a big Nottingham Forest fan. Daryl, good morning. I'm glad you've come on to speak to us, mate. You know, quite a bit of time has elapsed now since the match and since the start of the series of statements. Where are you with it all?
Morning, guys.
Morning.
I'm going to go against the grain. All I'm seeing from the mainstream media and outlets like yourselves and Rigger and Neville is lambasting of the club for the statement. Now, I understand that it's quite a strong statement and it's something that's not happened before, but it needed to. The only people that aren't supporting Forrest through this are the mainstream outlets. People aren't reading the room on this one. If you actually look through the comments, under the videos, etc., etc., the vast and overwhelming support from other supporters is in favour of what Forrest have done. People have got sick and tired of this. VAR has just become an absolute joke within itself. The statement regarding Stuart Atwell, excuse me, Forrest have been lambasted for saying, well, there seems to be some kind of bias, etc., etc. But the de facto point on this is that the PGMOL themselves, at the start of the season, require you to submit which team you support, etc. So in that themselves, they are saying that there is a potential for conflict and bias by their very own process. So why is it an issue for Forrest to point that out, but not for the PGMOL through their processes at the beginning of the season?
Do you want to address that, Simon?
Well, first of all, I think that's nonsense what you've just said about the mainstream media, because I've been a major advocate of defending Nottingham Forest against the point sanction they got, and I think it's appropriate to question things. I don't think anybody gets the right to allege corruption about an individual. You can allege lack of competency, but Nottingham Forest didn't allege that. They alleged corruption and bias.
No, Simon, right? this is about bias.
But that is by definition a form of corruption, because you're suggesting that your decision-making process is artificially influenced by an outside factor. And none of us at this moment in time, not you and not me, and I haven't finished, Dale, I'll listen to you.
If you're saying bias,
Dale, I hadn't finished.
By definition, corruption. Graham Souness intimated that himself yesterday.
But Graham Souness is not in a position of influence over a football match. He's a pundit on a radio show. So it's not the same thing, right? It's about influence that you have in positions of influence. Now, Nottingham Forest are in the cart because of your bad management last year over financial affairs, which puts you into a relegation battle. You conceded a goal against Liverpool because of a bad decision, but your centre-forward decided to dribble it out of a box and concede a goal as a result of it. And now what you're doing is you're putting a statement out, not about competency, it's about corruption. In any other industry, the individual concerned, if it were the banking or the finance industry or anything else, would be able to sue for defamation. I think Forrest have an absolute right to demand the reasons why these decisions went against them, but not the manner in which they've done it. And you can say, well, it needed hyperbole. It needed someone to say it. It needed someone to rally the troops against the incompetency of VAR. Your manager talked about conspiracy theories. Conspiracy theories. Who are the co-conspirators? We knew who the gunpowder plot conspirators were. Who are the conspirators that are trying to do Nottingham Forest up then?
come off it, Simon. I think we all know that's a little bit lost in translation.
It's not. Conspiracy theory. Your manager said conspiracy theory.
Yeah. Yeah, but as we know...
By whom? Who are the conspirators?
No, we're not agreeing with that. He's Portuguese, Simon. Come off it. I think we know he's a little bit clumsy.
Oh, okay, so I think Nuno Espirito Santo knows what he's saying and the reasons why he's saying it. But your main point is that Forrest and the mainstream media, whoever it is that you think are the mainstream media, are advocating for the establishment to be protected. And that is a load of old cobblers.
Well, that's all we've heard from you.
No,
that's
you haven't. You've heard me turn around and say Nottingham Forest have a right to a question to ask a question.
Dow, just before you go, do you want the audio released from the weekend?
Absolutely.
By the PGMOL. So to show that we don't take one side as opposed to the other, just before we came on air, we put in numerous calls to the PGMOL trying to establish whether or not they're going to release the audio today so that you and others like you, Darrell, will find out that the audio's going to be released. Or it's not going to be released. We're not sitting in our hands here, mate.
Because obviously you having the access to the audio is obviously views for yourselves, Jim. But on the other
thing, for you guys,
for us, that's what you're talking about. Journalistically, we're trying to find out if they're going to release the audio. Do you understand me?
To ask for the referee to be removed, because I keep hearing you peddling that one. You keep saying we didn't ask for the referee to be removed. And there wasn't an issue.
But that's what the PGMOL have said.
They're not allowed to ask for the referee to be removed.
But that's we didn't say that. What all we said was that Clattenburg got in touch with Howard Webb before the game to discuss the situation around Atwell. We then established from within the PGMOL that Clattenburg and Forrest did not ask for Atwell to be removed from the fixture, and they had no issue pre-match with Atwell being on VAR.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Jim White is Simon Jordan, and it's the co-owner of Charlton Athletic, Charlie Methven, live in studio with us. Charlie, you were educated at Eton and then Oxford. You really are posh, unlike Simon, aren't you? I mean, you truly are posh.
Well, it all depends how you define posh, Jim. I mean, I don't have a title. I'm not very rich. But yes, my parents sent me to a really good school.
There you go. Now, you were very rich and still are pretty
dragged
damn rich.
Out of the deepest, darkest, dankest parts of South London. Flung forth into the world.
A Croydon boy.
Absolutely.
Is that really South London? I thought it was Surrey.
No, South London. Croydon? No,
Charlie,
just
in the passing, you and I have spoken about Simon. Sparing his blushes, I think you respect the man because of his business acumen and what he achieved.
Indeed.
Yeah.
100%. I've never made that much money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that takes an awful lot of doing, whatever anyone else thinks. Creating successful businesses is difficult. Selling them well is difficult as well.
Sure. Charlie, here's the thing. So much to get through this morning. At Charlton Athletic, when the news came through the other day about the scrapping of FA Cup replays is going to become a reality. Did you guys know this was in the pipeline? Did you know this was coming along, this announcement?
No, I mean, not at all. It was sort of put on the table last summer when the Premier League and the Football League were having their discussion about, you know, a redistribution of financial revenue, and there was a sort of a number landed at by the Premier League chief executive, Richard Masters, and he said, well, look, I might be able to get this across my clubs if you give us a whole load of stuff in return. And a bunch of that stuff was put on the table in front of us. Effectively, the bosses at the Football League said to the Football League club owners and chief executives, look, I think we can get you this extra money, but you're going to have to give some stuff up that you're not going to like. There's some strings attached. So we started having that discussion about those strings. And then really before the whole thing reached fruition, Richard Masters, the Premier League chief executive, went back to his clubs and said, look, I think we've got this deal, but I've got various things, you know, back from the Football League for you. And the Premier League chief executive said, what? You're going to give some money to the Football League? What? That's our money. What are you doing? Yeah, but I've got these other things. Forget the other things. We'll get those as well. Don't worry. We always get those as well. We always get what we want in the end. But please don't give them any of our money. You must not. And that is basically what happened. So these, of course, our view was, is that all the things that we had been giving up potentially or discussing giving up were now off the table. What we didn't know was that the Football Association, which is effectively a small department of the Premier League, was actually doing a deal behind our backs to actually give up something on our behalf and then just present it back to us as saying, well, you know, you haven't got any more money, but we have given this up. Now, you want to sort of look at this particular incident about the scrapping of replays in isolation. This is the latest in a long line of humiliations heaped upon the FA Cup by the Premier League with the connivance of the FA. This has been going on a long, long time. So you can say, well, you know, not playing FA Cup games on a Saturday, it's a small enough thing. Well, you know, not having replays, it's a small enough thing. Well, you know, not having the final at the end of the season, it's a small enough thing. But when you add the entire thing up, what you're doing is you are systematically diminishing and ultimately destroying the oldest and best cup competition in the world, in my view. Other people might see it differently, but I see there are three things in English football which really, really make English football special and which got me hooked as a young kid. Right, the first thing is, fair enough, is the competitiveness of the top division. You know, our top division is competitive, other leagues is not competitive.
True.
This is really important.
True.
A meaningful promotion and relegation from that league, which again is something that's being chipped away at. The second thing is the strength of the pyramid that lies underneath it. Again, something that other countries don't have and would kill for. That's really important. And the third thing is the FA Cup. Those three things we have and other countries don't have.
Charlie,
and other countries would love
on.
To have it.
You're
and all I
on.
Care about is protecting those three things.
Yes. That you cannot argue against that, Simon, can
oh,
you?
Oh, no. There's a lot of validity in what Charlie's saying. There's a lot of validity. But that genie's out of the bottle. That genie came out of the bottle in 1992 when the Premier League decided to form itself. Because the Football League was what it was. The FA decided to become what it's become, which was not do the job of de facto regulator, and has now made itself, just as Charlie quite rightly sums up, a department in the Premier League and ultimately someone that works with Nike on changing St. George's crosses. That's what the FA's become. But we are in a situation now where the uniqueness and the success of the Premier League has been compounded by the incompetence and inadequacies in other functions. The Football League has been poor for a long time in its management. I think you've probably got two of its most capable operators in its history in Trevor Birch and Rick Parry operating now. And the FA haven't done their job. But you've got a Premier League which is remarkably successful. Now you've got one tool, a tool that I don't like, which is the independent regulator. I like it for the stalking horse it can be utilised for, to be able to redistribute a bit more equitably.
Yeah.
But I don't like it for all the other things it will bring.
Right. I mean, Charlie, to you, what was more offensive? The decision to scrap the replays or the fact there was seemingly no consultation?
I think you have to take the two together, because without caring about the first, then the second, there's nothing much I can say about that. But when it's something that is central to the game as a whole, and don't forget the vast majority of clubs who enter the FA Cup are not Premier League clubs. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of clubs that enter. And for the majority, the rest of us, the FA Cup is very important, whereas the Premier League clubs, it's less important. So if you are at the FA thinking about what to do with the FA Cup, you need to be speaking to the majority of clubs for whom that competition is absolutely crucial, not just in revenue terms, but also in terms of the passion of the game. I mean, Jim, I just want to just tell you about how I first really became a passionate football fan. I'd been taken in the 80s by my granddad to Oxford United. He was a farmer. He'd been involved in the club when it was Headington United, and he took me to watch Oxford United when they were in the top division in those days. Eventually, I started to go on my own, and the tie, the FA Cup tie that really got me fanatically into football was a time about 1992 when Oxford played against Leeds, who were the then top division champions, at the Manor, 2-2. back up to Wellham Road. Game swung both ways, ended up Oxford winning 3-2 in the last minute of that replay with a 30-yarder from our young left-winger, Chrissy Allen. I was then chased down the street by crowbar-wielding thugs all the way to the railway station, and it was the most amazing day of my life. And ever since then, I've been a passionate football fan.
Right.
So FA Cup replays matter. They do matter as part of the bigger thing, which is that the FA Cup matters.
Yes.
And every time that we chip away at the FA Cup, we're losing something much more precious than you can imagine. The reason it's happening, the reason this is happening is that the people who run the clubs in the Premier League, or many of them, I should say, don't have that history in the game. They don't understand all this thing. They ultimately would like it to be a franchise league. Because don't forget, when I say the competitiveness of our top division is really important, don't forget that a whole bunch of the Premier League club owners wanted to destroy all that with the European Super League. So even their own league, they don't really care all that much about. All they care about is the capital value of their own clubs, and they want to make their own clubs as valuable as possible. And what those of us, the rest of us in the game, whether it be Simon and you on this show, or me at an EFL club, or the FA in theory should be, but certainly the Football League, which as Simon said is ably led these days, probably for the first time in an awful long time, we've got to try and be the defenders of this precious fabric of English football, because it takes decades and decades to build up, but only one or two bad decisions
so
to tear down.
It's not over, Charlie. It's not over. I mean, Andy Holt, I think at Atkins and Stanley, is calling on EFL clubs to boycott the cup in protest. Darragh McAntony, who's more than an able substitute for this man, live and talk sport.
Well, I don't know about that.
At Peterborough United, Darragh McAntony was seething the other day about this, just as you are, but very articulately, you put your case together there, Charlie. Is there anything else you can do? The decision's been made.
Well, I mean, a decision has been made, and ultimately, there are now discussions being had in the corridors of power. Not discussions by me, but nonetheless, as a somebody involved with an EFL club, you are told about the discussions that are happening. And then we also have the advent of the independent football regulator. Now, the football regulator has three tasks, as it's currently going, it's in Parliament today, being debated in Parliament today for the first time.
Indeed.
Number one, to reduce football club financial distress. That's their number one task. Number two, to protect the cultural assets of English football. Number three, to promote the interests of fan and fan engagement. Now, for me, preserving and protecting and enhancing the FA Cup covers all three of those. It helps reduce football club distress because it's a key source of revenue for lots of football clubs outside the Premier League. It's a key cultural asset broadcast around the world and admired by other jurisdictions all over the world. And it's absolutely massive with fans. I came up to London on Saturday to go to the Valley on the train with a whole bunch of City, Chelsea, Coventry fans all up for the weekend for FA Cup games. And do you know what? Even the fans of the big clubs know how big the FA Cup is. The fans know it, just as they did with the Super League. It was the fans of the Big Six who killed the Super League. Let's not forget that. So this is not about the fans of big clubs against small clubs. Most of us feel the same way. Most of us really care about the FA Cup.
So, Charlie, you feel that the regulator should cover the remit of the FA Cup?
Well, I think the FA Cup is clearly a key cultural football asset. There's no way around that.
Yeah.
So I think ultimately any attempt to destroy either the pyramid or the FA Cup comes under the IFR's remit for sure.
I mean, I'm looking at the messages coming in here. This man, Charlie Methven, is known to, you're known obviously to Sunderland fans, to Charlton fans, Charlie, and others. But many don't know you. This fella is talking sense. I'm sure Simon has to agree. Do you agree with what Charlie is saying?
I agree with the values of the FA Cup. I agree with the values of the EFL Cup. I don't listen to Seffern and his nonsense about disbanding the EFL Cup, which is a major revenue generator, which is a property owned by the Football League. But I'm also a pragmatist and a realist and understand the direction of travel, and you've got to get the balance right. And I know, and despite the protestations that Charlie may wish to advance, if the 72 EFL clubs are sat down and there's a trade-off mentality of, well, look, we want to get rid of things like FA Cup replays, but we're going to give you a better distribution deal from the TV broadcast revenues. Every one of those clubs, besides those that are being a bit pious, will take the revenue, because anyone that's writing a business plan that projects for FA Cup replays in their business plan is a bloody fool, because you don't. You write a third-round FA Cup and you write a first-round League Cup or whatever way you do in your business plans. I want to protect the value, but the direction of travel is about every story I've heard besides this soliloquy from Charlie, which is right, from football fans reeling into the shows. This FA Cup replay paid for my academy. This FA Cup replay paid for my training ground. So it's about money. I thought it was about replays. It's about the money that the replays generate. Okay, well, if there's a distribution deal that you weapon, and I think the Premier League have played into the EFL's hands. They've showed people what a bunch of bureaucrats they are and how they dictate the policy. The FA have come in the line like the demented poodle that they are, and I think it's great for the independent regulator, which I think is a loathsome object, but it will be utilisable to get distributions. And all of these clubs will go, I tell you what, we'll lose the FA Cup replay because we're getting £2 million a year.
Do you agree with that, Charlie? Just before I ask you something, do you agree with what you're saying there?
There's an awful lot of truth in what Simon says. I think the only difference between us is I don't think it's an either or. I think we need to look for both. I think we need to look for financial distribution, not because we're greedy or want more money, but because actually the government's own report says that current financial distribution is inequitable. That's the reason why, right? And it's causing problems throughout the football pyramid. So put that to one side. I'm very confident that the independent football regulator will come to the same conclusion that Tracy Crouch MP came to and the same conclusion that the government's own white paper came to, which is that it is inequitable as things currently stand. That's that. On the other side, we've got protection of cultural assets like the FA Cup, built up over decades and decades, and then chipped away at to the point where the foundations of that building are now not as strong as they should be.
It's a fair observation. The irony of the inequitability observation from the EFL is that they will then inequitably distribute the league amongst themselves. So when they get the money from the Premier League, they'll give 80% or now 75% to one league and 25% between the other two leagues. So they'll follow the model of inequitability. There's the hypocrisy of it all.
Charlie, a lot to get through. We're coming up to 11 o'clock. We'll have a bulletin thereafter. We'll carry on. But there is this man, Charlie Methven, bang on, says Mike the Grimsby fan. And of course, a whole bunch of Charlton fans right behind you with what you're seeing live in TalkSport.
Download, stand well back, listen. Outspoken with White and Jordan from the world's biggest sports radio station, TalkSport.
Many of you will be tuning in on May the 25th because there is a very, very big fight going on in Leeds that day. The eagerly anticipated rematch between bitter rivals, Josh Taylor and Jack Cattrall. Of course, Jack Cattrall, British super lightweight boxer, controversially lost the fight to Josh Taylor when it looked like Cattrall had done more than enough, but Taylor got the nod. It was a split decision in Glasgow way back on February 2022. Honestly, seems like yesterday, but it's a long, long time ago now. And now they've got it together after a couple of postponements. The fight goes ahead on the 25th of May in Leeds. And I am delighted to say Jack Cattrall joins us live on the show this lunchtime. Jack, good afternoon to you. How are you?
Good afternoon, Simon. Good afternoon, Jordan. You okay, Jim?
Good. Thank you very much indeed. Jack, it seems like it was never going to happen, but now are you totally focused on the date, on the venue, on the fight itself?
I'm locked in and ready to go. We're 4 weeks Saturday. We had the postponement. I stayed in the gym, extra time to prepare, so I bang up for it. And I'm so excited now. I'm counting down the days. I'm making the days count, and I'll be there the 25th of May, ready to go.
After the previous postponement, Jack, was it hard to reset your mind? Because presumably, when you get a date like this for a fight, and it's such an important one for you, the countdown's very much on, and that countdown is super important to you, isn't it?
You know what? It was frustrating, but I'm in the gym. I stayed disciplined. And I told him, I said, get me another big fight. But there was admin. This was the fight that was going to be made. It was rescheduled. And ultimately, I had to be held back because I'm in the gym and preparing and we're going, taking sparring partners away. It was for a case for me, we're not going too soon. So we come off a little bit, but we're where we are now. We're where we should be. We're 4 weeks out and training's going well. I'm living good and I'm just excited for it.
I spoke to Sam the other day. He said precisely that. He was talking about you and how good you looked in the gym and how you were really, really looking very focused and very determined. And I think his actual terminology, Sam Jones, your manager, actually saying he looks phenomenal in a gym. How difficult was it? I know you just touched upon it, but these campaigns of going into a fight are very structured for you guys, and to have it pushed back 4 weeks has had to pull you back on the choker. So what have you been doing during that period of time where you know you've got to hold back a little bit to get yourself ready to be on the boil when you land at the fight?
Yeah, so ultimately the call come through. You have the frustration, the 24, 48 hours. Is it going to happen? Is it not? You know what? And thankful to Sam and Matchroom, they managed to get it rescheduled within 24 hours. The following day, we had the date, the rescheduled date. So as far as that's concerned, as the fight was postponed, I didn't then wake up the next day thinking, when's it going to be? They said, look, it's going to be a quick turnaround. We're 4 weeks away. So I think it was the case of coming home and having like a 10-day cooling off period.
Yeah.
We took sparring partners away. We was building up 8, 10, 12 rounds. You're really going through it. But again, you need to peak at the right time. So
you're on top of that.
Thankful for my team, Jamie Moore, and we come off a little bit, and now we're building again, ready to peak at the right time for this fight.
Jack, can I ask you what lessons you took away from the first fight, besides obviously an inherent belief that you can beat him? Because I noticed a difference, and I think I mentioned it to you when you were in the studio with Josh, that there's a change in personality from you. You're very robust now. You're a little bit more aggressive in the way that you're speaking about the fight. And the first time round, Josh was really dismissive of you and didn't feel that you deserved to be in a ring with him. And now the dynamic has changed, and you're now approaching it with a much more aggressive, controlled aggression, but a much more confident outlook. So my question is what's providing that thought process, and what did you take away from the first fight?
You know what? I was quietly confident in the first fight. Ultimately, he was undisputed champion, and I had to gain the respect of not him, but the wider public. I'd never fought for a world title before, so it was a big step up for me, but one that I was quietly confident about. But after the remarks from Josh, and ultimately after the first fight, it's given me the confidence to know that I can step in there, I can challenge the top boys in the division, and I'm more than capable of mixing it with the best.
You know, you're in here, Jack, with Taylor, promoting the fight, which now has been rescheduled for the end of May, as we were describing, the 25th. And when you were in here, you sat to my immediate left. Everybody watched it on YouTube and Facebook. Taylor sat over there, and you had a security guy in between you. Mm. And honestly, the atmosphere was pretty vile between the two of you. That wasn't just for show, was it? You do not like him, and he certainly doesn't like you.
Yeah, it's well documented. There's been a lot of back and forth since the first fight. I don't get in my feelings about it. I'm not emotional about it, but we don't like each other. We've made that clear, and we get to settle it like men. We're not going to throw handbags about and start screaming at each other. We get to get in the ring, get the little gloves on, and settle it.
So you've got the utmost confidence you're going to win this, Jack, are you? What can you say at the moment about where your mindset is and what you can show on the night? What will you show on the night?
You know what? I'm taking confidence from the work I'm putting in. I'm training really hard. And that's what's always given me confidence come fight night. I look back at the 10, 12, 15, a two-year period where I've not had fight dates, but I've stayed in the gym, I've stayed working, I'm traveling, I'm sparring people. That's what gives me the confidence, and I'm bang up for this fight. I think after the first fight, you have a feeling when you've been in the ring with somebody for the first time, when we've seen that at the weekend with Ryan Garcia and Henry. They've shared the ring before, so I've been in the ring. Listen, he's going to come with a different approach, and so am I, but I've been in there, and I just feel like I'm the better fighter. I'm going to be improved since last time. I feel like I've matured, I've gained that experience, and I'm going to take it into the second fight.
Jack, you mentioned there in New York, the events over the weekend, Ryan Garcia handed out the first loss of Devin Haney's career. What did you make of it? Did that surprise you?
It did surprise me. And it just goes to show, don't believe everything you see on social media. Ryan Garcia's obviously, he's had a wild couple months, but he went in there and I think he had zero respect for Devin Haney, and he took it to him. I thought Devin boxed well in spells. There was quite a few rounds that Ryan gave away, but when he did put his combinations together and he come forward, he wasn't bothered what was coming back at him, and he did what he needed to do.
Could you envisage yourself in with one of those two at some stage?
Yeah, I envisage all of them. I picture fighting all these fighters, Lopez, Garcia, Haney, but that's not my mind right now. I've got one job to do, and that's 4 weeks on Saturday, and that's smash Josh him.
You've been in touch with him recently, or is that it? No communication until
on
the fight?
Valentine's Day, Jim, yeah.
That's it now. We're working away, both in the gym. I see that he's still training and he's fit and well, which is good. I want him at his best come fight night. And we'll come together fight week, which I'm sure will be exciting. And like I said before, we get to settle it like men, and that's what I'm happy to do.
You think you knock him out, Jack?
Yeah, definitely. I'm more than confident I carry enough power to hurt Josh. I think this fight's perfect timing for me, and I believe when I see the opportunity, I'm taking it.
And with the postponements, Jack, he's had injury issues. Do you detect vulnerability in Taylor?
I'm going into the fight with envisioning Taylor at his very best without the injuries. But listen, let's make no mistake. He's 32, 33 years old now. He's had the niggles. He's had the injuries. The feet, the knee, the elbow, the eye. So, and these things happen. I don't think any fighter goes into a fight 100% niggle free. But ultimately, I got to prepare for Josh at his very best.
Chad, just finally, we saw you in here. And as I said, the atmosphere was pretty grim. It was pretty vile. We're glad to get the other end of the interview. But as you approach fight night and you're getting into the ring with Taylor, how do you control your nerves on an occasion like this? It's must win for him, but it's must win for you. Neither of you can even consider losing, can you?
No, I don't think about losing. And that's why I turn up, I get up every day and I put 100% into everything I do. I can't envision losing. But like you said then, I've got to detach myself emotionally, which I am. I know I can do. I've got to go into this fight and treat it as a business, and it is business, and it's a big fight for me. But emotions aside, I know what I need to do come fight night, and I think the only person that will get emotional and maybe make the mistakes is Josh.
Jack, listen, thank you so much for joining us, mate. We're looking forward to it. Josh Taylor goes in against Jack Catchell in Leeds, May the 25th.
The world's most dangerous download. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast from. We're back tomorrow to bring you the best of the show.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.